What's up, everyone, and welcome back to the Fast and Furious season here, Cinematic Reviews. I'm your host, Chris, and this is a show about all things movie and TV. Every week, I break down and review the newest releases, beloved franchises like Fast and Furious, and even upcoming projects. You can support the show by hitting that follow button on your favorite podcast network, as well as following it on all social media platforms. All those handles can be found on either the Cinematic Reviews Facebook page or the show's website at podspage.com/cinematicreviews. It helps a lot, and I really do appreciate all the love and support out there from everyone. I didn't know pizza places made motors. Too Fast, Too Furious is speeding your way.
All right, fire them up! It's time for the week to go home.
Keep your eyes on the road, cowboy.
Are you nervous?
He did the stare and drive on you, didn't he?
He got that from me.
What's his deal?
I got a problem with authority.
You just need to chill out.
You ready for this?
Come on, man. Guns, murderers, and crooked cops. I was made for this, bruh.
Too Fast, Too Furious was released on June 6, 2003. The film stars Paul Walker returning as Brian O'Connor, Tyrese Gibson as Roman Pierce, Colt Hauser as Carter, Eva Mendes as Monica, and Chris Ludacris Bridges as Tej Parker. The film was directed by John Singleton, who is best known for this, Boys in the Hood, and Four Brothers. Singleton unfortunately passed away back in 2019. The film grossed over $236 million worldwide against a $76 million budget, which is really, really impressive. Two different scripts were commissioned for the film, one with Vin Diesel and one without, in case he did not return, which he did not. He does not show up again until at the end of Tokyo Drift. A technical specialist was on set at all times because so much neon lighting was used inside the cars. A roll cage would have been too obvious during the bridge jump, so a remote control version was rigged up with a dummy in the driver's seat. Bad Boys 2 was actually filming on the other side of Cape Florida State Park at the same time as this film was filming. The scene where the Corvette crashes into the Mustang on the freeway was not scripted, but the stuntman walked away with zero injuries. Some parts of the ending was not scripted either, so the actors just improvised. Singleton actually encouraged the actors to improvise because he wanted to keep the feeling of the film more interesting, which I totally agree with. It makes the film, in my opinion, more fun. Paul Walker performed many stunts himself, like when Brian power slides towards the crowd after he wins the first race in the film. This is the only Fast and Furious film to not feature Vin Diesel as Dominic Toretto because he was filming Triple X at the same time. Originally, Singleton wanted Ja Rule to return as Edwin, but he turned it down because he felt too big for the role. So the Tej Parker character was created in his place and Ludacris was cast. I think they made the right decision on that. 50 Cent was considered for the role of Roman before Tyrese Gibson was cast. In the club scene, Carter calls Brian Kidd. In reality, Cole Hauser is actually 2 years younger than Paul Walker. Singleton credited Top Gun as a major influence of the way he made the film. As you know, Top Gun is the massive successful film starring Tom Cruise about Maverick and all that. This system that the FBI used to track Brian and Roman during their audition assignment was called Skynet. Skynet, of course, was the AI system in the Terminator franchise. I believe it is an actual system as well, used by the U.S. government to track possible terrorist threats. Do not quote me on that, but that is what I found in the research. And then lastly, this was the last of the Fast and Furious films to be released on VHS. So Too Fast, Too Furious is probably the film I saw the most growing up out of these first three. I mean, my dude Paul Walker is the star of this sequel. The writing isn't the greatest in the film, I know that. It's actually pretty bad, but I still have a blast every time I watch it because I really, really like the cast in this. Paul Walker returns as Brian O'Connor, as we saw in the first film. He is no longer a cop, though, after letting Dominic go at the end of the first film. Brian has now been recruited by a joint task force consisting of both the FBI and U.S. Customs. They are after a dangerous criminal, Carter Verone, who is played by Cole Hauser in the film. Brian also recruits his childhood friend, Roman Pierce, who is played by the hilarious Tyrese Gibson. They race all around Miami to stop Carter and his operation in exchange for their criminal records to be expunged. They also cross paths with an undercover customs agent called Monica, who is played by the awesome Eva Mendez. So Paul Walker, my dude, he is great in this film. He brings the same charisma and energy from the first film into the sequel. The writing, like I said, of course, is not as good as the first film, but I still really, really enjoy watching Paul Walker as Brian. It's my favorite role of his by far. I actually prefer Brian and Roman starring in this film instead of throwing Vin Diesel into the mix. Their chemistry, to me, is what makes this film so enjoyable. Throwing Diesel into the would just make it a completely different movie, and not in the good way. That's probably a really, really hot take for a lot of the fan base out there, but it's how I feel. I think Paul Walker is a much better actor, or was a much better actor than Vin Diesel. Now, Tyrese isn't a great actor as well, but he's always hilarious as the Roman Pierce character. It's, again, probably my favorite role of his for sure. Most of the quotes in today's favorite quote segment are going to be from Tyrese. The back and forth between Tej and Roman is one of the many things that makes the franchise so enjoyable later on as it goes on. It's always fun to go back to see when they first met in Miami during this first film. Speaking of Ludacris, he's awesome as Tej Parker. He's very lovable and smart, and he's got a lot of charisma to him. I love seeing him pop up in the franchise. Unfortunately, Roman and Tej don't return until Fast 5, but after that, they're pretty much in the rest of the installments. So something to look forward to. Cole Hauser, who I said plays Carter in the film, he is the villain of it, is one of those actors that I always saw in random roles going up. He was in Good Will Hunting, ER, Pitch Black, which also stars Vin Diesel. He was also in The Breakup, Olympus Has Fallen, Tears of the Sun. He's been in a bunch of films during his long career. I remember him most from Pitch Black, and then of course this, Too Fast, Too Furious. He didn't really bring anything special to the franchise though. He was your typical villain, just more boring. For most of the film, he's either sucking on a cigar or he's smacking Eva Mendez on the ass. That essentially is his character. His two goons, who I'm drawing a blank on what their names are, did most of the heavy lifting, which I guess is to be expected from a crime lord of his stature. At the end of the day, though, the script just didn't give him a whole lot to work with, because I think Hauser is actually a really, really good actor. The script just holds this film back, as well as the cast, from being so great or reaching their full potential. The action and racing is really, really awesome, though. We get Paul Walker driving backwards, staring into Eva Mendez's eyes as he's driving. He even drives his car into a freaking boat, which is cool. One of the most iconic stunts is probably Roman ejecting one of Carter's goons out of his car and yelling, "Ejecto Cito, cuz." I always love rewatching that stunt. The jokes are hilarious, of course. Most of them, like I said, come from Tyrese, but that's okay. You know, Tyrese cracking jokes is his strength, and I like it when he leans into that, especially in this franchise. We get some of it in the Transformers movies, as I talked about in that season. Like the first film, though, this installment makes me miss the racing element of the franchise also. I honestly like the effect where we go into the cars and see what's going on inside of them when the driver, you know, hits that NOS button like Brian does a lot in this film. I think it's a perfectly cool effect, and part of me kind of wishes that the future films kind of did the same thing. I think Fast 10 had a scene like this where we see Vin Diesel, you know, hitting that NOS button and seeing the effect of it. But I think these earlier films did it a lot better. Now with these newer installments, they just didn't quite, you know, hit it right with that special element. But that is just my take on it. Too Fast, Too Furious is definitely better than all those newer films, though. Starting with Fate of the Furious, that is truly where I think the franchise hit a wall and unfortunately died, you know, along with Paul Walker, who passed away during the filming of Furious 7. And then Fate of the Furious was the first film to not feature Paul Walker. And it just the franchise just really started to go downhill from there. Tokyo Drift is actually the only one of these newer films that is weaker. But I'll save all my thoughts for that for next week. I want to focus on Too Fast, Too Furious today. So let's take a quick break before diving into some standout scenes. Check out new release reactions every week on the show. Next up, we return to the Mission Impossible franchise with Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, which sees Ethan Hunt and his IMF team racing to stop a world-ending weapon from falling into the wrong hands. The film is out now, only in theaters. Go see the latest installment of the beloved franchise this weekend at your local theater, and then head over to Cinemac Reviews for the reaction episode. Time to break down some scenes. The first one I have on the list is the first race of the film. This is where the film pretty much opens up. We have a race between four drivers, Suki, Orange Julius, Slapjack, and then, of course, Brian O'Connor. Ted, this is where we first meet Tej, Ludacris's character. He kind of orchestrates all of these races. Suki, Orange Julius, and Slapjack show up, and unfortunately, they don't have a fourth. And then this is where Brian comes in. Tej calls up Brian and tells him, hey, you want to make some money? We have a spot tonight. And he's like, damn straight, I want to earn some cash. And I love the reaction of everybody when he shows up. It's like Brian is this big legend down in Miami where he's just owning the streets. He's winning all these races. And everybody knows if he is part of this race, he is probably going to go home with all the cash. So I just really love everybody's reaction when Paul Walker shows up in his Skyline. That Skyline is freaking sweet. That'll come up in another segment later on in the show. But yeah, that's with the blue underglow and just the silver and blue painting on it. It's just really freaking cool. He's got the fire coming out of the exhaust port. It's just really freaking cool. And then we get to this race, and this race is insane. You know, we get the same effect that we did in the first film where every time somebody hits the NOS, everything just goes blurry, and it's just a really, really awesome effect during these races. We get a lot of, you know, maneuvering. We have Orange Julius and Suki kind of fighting each other in third and fourth, and then you have Slapjack and Brian kind of fighting for the first place. They're going through the streets. Everything's crazy. And then eventually, Tej brings up his secret surprise, and it ends up being the bridge being lifted up a little bit to create a jumping point. Slapjack is the first one to hit that NOS button and go off. He loses control and ends up crashing into a Pepsi sign. And then Brian, at the same time, does the double dose hit of NOS and just leapfrogs over Slapjack. It was really freaking cool. I love Paul Walker's reaction when he's like in the air after lifting off that bridge. It was just really, really crazy. Orange Julius bitches out and says, hell no. Suki punches her NOS and she ends up making it. And her front end is completely totaled, but she ends up getting second place. Which is really cool. But yeah, it's just a really, really awesome race. Makes me miss this element of the franchise in the newer installments for sure. The next scene I have, we have Brian trying to outrun the cops after this first race. I put this down because I wanted to talk about the secret weapon that the cops have in this film. And that is their these EMP spike things that they shoot out of these guns onto the cars. It's really, really cool. I don't remember. I believe it's the custom agent who shoots him. Agent Markham, I think. Yeah. James Remar plays him. Really, really awesome. I just love the effect of it, you know, shooting this giant spike out and driving it into the car and just shutting everything down like an EMP. It was just really, really cool. Then we get this fun fight between Brian and Roman outside the Barstow Speedway, which is where Roman is working slash living because he is under house arrest. Turns out that Brian and Roman have a history together. You know, they grew up together. And then there's this story about how Roman went to jail and he blames Brian. But Brian explains that it's actually because he hates me because I became a cop. It's not because he went to jail. It's the fact that I became a cop and he felt betrayed because I joined the other side. So then this kind of fight breaks out. You really get to see Paul Walker's fighting style in here. And it's a style that he will use a lot in like Fast 5, 6, and 7. He's got that really, you know, trained cop technique where he uses his legs a lot. He's not really using his hands. Roman is the one that really is more of a brute force. You know, he's throwing the punches and Paul Walker is more or less just trying to, you know, use defensive tactics with his legs and all that stuff. So you really get to see the two difference of, you know, a trained fighter like Brian through his cop days. And then you have Roman who grew up on the streets and he's just really, you know, bare knuckle brawling it. It was really, really cool. And I didn't really notice that until this rewatch. You know, before this, you know, watching it as a kid, you know, you don't really pick up stuff like that. You just see two characters that you love fighting each other and then they eventually become friends again. But now with all these movies that I'm seeing and I'm older, you know, I'm really starting to see these different elements of the film. So like this, you know, seeing the two fighting styles is really, really cool to see for the first time. Then we have one of my favorites, and this is the audition race for Carter. I think it's like 10 different drivers show up, including Brian and Roman, to find a spot in Carter's organization so that they can infiltrate and try to take him down from the inside. They are tasked to head to a local car pound or vehicle pound area where his Ferrari is sitting, and they have a package to grab out of the glove compartment. So they all race. We get this intense but really cool highway speed race where they're zipping through traffic. One scene where they have to go in between these two semis. One of the dudes ends up screwing it up, and he gets sucked in underneath one of the semis and just completely crushed. Like, this guy is straight up dead. There's no way this guy survived it because of the way the tires just crushed the driver's seat. It was brutal and insane. But you also, at the same time, you also get, you know, Brian and Roman kind of racing each other, as well as the rest of the gang, even though they are on a team technically, but their personalities, they're still always racing each other, even when on their same team. So that's always fun. This is where we get that scene where Brian drives backwards and he's flicking Roman off. He's yelling, "How about them apples, Ro?" And he's just driving backwards. This is really, really fun seeing these two guys kind of, you know, bicker back and forth like childhood friends. It's really, really cool. Next scene is Brian and Roman versus Fonzie and Fabio, as they call them. I should look up what these guys' names are, because I always just remember them as Fonzie and Fabio, because that's what Brian and Roman call them. See if I can find them on the IMDb page. I am actually not seeing them on here, so that is a mystery to me. But yeah, so they just refer to them as Fonzie and Fabio. They are the ones with the American muscle cars that they need for their plan. So they end up racing these guys at night. They have to, as Tej explains it, they have to go down and back twice. You know, there's a barrel at the end, so you kind of have to drift turn around that and then come back, you know, kind of tag team your teammate. And then the first team to have both drivers come back first is the winner. At first, it seems like, you know, Fonzie and Fabio are going to win. But this is a Fast and Furious movie, so we have to have Brian and Roman win. Eventually, Brian is able to outmaneuver. I believe it's Fabio is the one that he drives last by hitting that NOS button and just annihilating him in the race, which is really cool. Just a really cool small race scene in this film. Again, just makes me miss the racing stuff in future stuff. I mean, I think we get a big race in like Fast Five. I think there's one in Six. Don't really get one in Seven or Eight. You know, it's just they really start to focus on the stunts instead of the racing. But in reality, the racing is what was a huge element with these early films, and I really do miss it as a fan of it. Then we probably get one of the most insane and disturbing scenes of the franchise, and probably one of the most disturbing scenes I've ever seen in a movie. This is where Carter does the old rat in the bucket trick on the dirty cop, who is, I've seen this guy so many times. He's been in a lot of films, Sons of Anarchy. Oh yeah, Mark Boone Jr. As the dirty detective. So they're at this nightclub. Brian and Roman meet up with Carter and Eva Mendez at the nightclub. Carter kind of shows Brian and Roman how he's able to get all these windows and opportunities for his drivers. They bring in, you know, cash, drugs, and all that stuff. Turns out it is this dirty detective played by Mark Jr. who is in the club, you know, soaking up the perks of being in on the payroll for Carter. But he's a little more hesitant on giving them this 15-minute window that they need. So Carter comes up with the idea of, hey, give me a bucket, give me a rat. I'm going to make this guy commit to this plan. And they do it. They strap him down. And anybody who doesn't know what the rat in the bucket trick is, it is where you put the rat on somebody's, you know, chest or stomach, and you put the bucket over them, and you take a, you know, a blowtorch or whatever, and you heat the end of the bucket up to where it forces the rat to go only one direction. And as Carter puts it, goes south. Yes, there's a body there. So what are they going to do? They're going to cut open, bite, whatever they got to do. They're going to get away from that heat, and they're going to go burrowing inside you until they get away. It's really disturbing. Fortunately, we don't get to that point. All we really get is, you know, the rat biting him a little bit and a couple of scratches. We don't see him actually go into the dirty cop, which is really good. This would have been a way different movie if they went that far, but it's still really disturbing because of just the concept of what would happen if this, you know, rat in the bucket trick actually went full speed. It's just really disturbing. You got Eva Mendez, you know, holding his mouth shut, and Roman is just freaking out like, Jesus, she's actually playing along with this. And then Brian's got to remind him that, hey, she's on the cover, she's playing a role, she has to do this in order to survive. But yeah, it's just a really, really disturbing scene with this rat in the bucket trick that Carter does on the dirty cop. Just really, really, this, we don't ever see a scene like this ever again. And it's freaking wild that this is a Fast and Furious franchise. Then we jump forward quite a bit here. Then we get to Brian grabbing the EMP spike off this car during the chase sequence. Again, just really like this EMP spike design thing. It was a really cool idea to kind of have cops have the upper hand against these racers. We have Paul Walker kind of hanging out of the car, trying to yank this giant spike out of this car. I think it's Roberto is one of the goons of Carter. He's trying to drive the car straight so Paul Walker can yank this giant spike out of his car. It's really crazy, but it's really cool to see at the same time. Then we have the curveball scene that Brian and Roman throw to the cops with the help of Tej. So what they do is they do the old switch cars technique. You know, they go into this garage. Tej opens up the doors and just 100 cars come flooding out to kind of, you know, psych out the cops. And then Roman and Brian end up coming out of the muscle cars that they won in their fight against Fonzie and Fabio. And that's kind of how they were able to get away from it. I believe it was Tej and Suki were in the other two cars that they were originally in. So they kind of throw off the cops there. Just a really, really great scene. Great plan. That was executed. It was really, really cool seeing all these different types of cars and just the chaos that unfolds and just the cops being totally dumbfounded by what they're seeing It was just a really, really awesome plan. Really, really executed as well. Then we have the most iconic scene in the film and probably one of the most iconic scenes of the franchise, and that is Roman ejecting Carter's goon out of the car and screaming "Ejecto Cito, cuz," which will come back in the favorite quotes, of course. But yeah, it was just really cool. So they, so a couple scenes before this, they kind of set up that Brian had this idea of what to use with the extra NOS that they had laying around. Well, turns out they used the NOS to fix up the passenger seat in their cars in order to eject these two guys out so that they can do like stage three of their plan of taking down Carter. Roman is able to get rid of his goon, but we jump forward a little later and it turns out that Carter played a trick on them in revealing the location of the meetup. So Brian is unable to eject the goon that's with him, and they have to kind of improvise once they get to the actual meet place with Carter and Eva Mendez. So, but that was really, really cool scene. I think the special effects are a little dated, but I think for the most part, this scene holds up with him shooting the door off and then the seat kind of getting ejected out of the car. It was really cool. Then the last scene I have is Brian driving his car into Carter's boat, Dukes of Hazzard style, as Tyrese says. Really, this is probably one of the moment where the franchise is like, we could get a little crazy with the stunts. You know, let's make it a little unrealistic. And this is really unrealistic. I mean, I couldn't imagine the timing and the physics you would have to do in your head mentally before making this jump. It was just freaking insane. So Brian gets this idea of, I don't know what it was at the end of this road, some kind of way for him to get, you know, lift off. And he drives off of this. I don't know if it was a dock or whatever, but he ends up flying into the freaking air and crashing into Carter's boat. It was freaking nuts. But it's really, really cool how they were able to execute this. And even today in 2023, it still holds up for the most part, even though it is really unrealistic and really, really dangerous. It's just a crazy sequence of Brian just jumping off and crashing his car into a freaking moving boat. It was just, it's crazy. It's awesome. It's so cool. Next up, we have favorite quotes. So kind of like the first film, I don't have a long list of quotes. Some of the other installments like Fast 5 or 6 are going to have a long list of quotes. But there's some really good ones in here. Like I said earlier, a lot of them are from Tyrese. He was given a lot of the more hilarious quotes, or, you know, he improvised a lot of the stuff. But so the first one I have written down is Suki screaming "move bitch" during the first race. This of course is a nod to one of Ludacris's songs, which is titled "Move Bitch" as well. It's a very, very iconic song that I grew up listening to, so that was really cool that they kind of snuck that into the film. This one from Brian, this is the quote that I opened up the episode with: I didn't know pizza places made motors. Then we have a couple from Roman here. We hungry, that was a damn rat, man. Come on, man, guns, murderers, and crooked cops, I was made for this. This one from Tej, which I love: fellas, I know my tabs are out of date, but damn. Probably one of my favorite ones. Couple more from Roman: we're doing some real Dukes of Hazzard shit, don't drop the soap, big homie. And then of course, Ejecto Cito, cuz, when he shoots the Carter's goon out of his car. Then the last one I have is the one from Brian at the end of the film: my pockets ain't empty, cuz, when he reveals that he took a few stacks of the cash that they took from Carter. So those are some really, really awesome quotes. My favorite is probably going to be fellas, I know my tabs are out of date, but damn, I just love how Ludacris performed that line. It was just really, really funny. So favorite car. It's definitely got to be Brian's 1999 Nissan Skyline GTR R34. This is the blue and silver car that he drives in the first race of the film, with the blue underglow and the fire coming out of the exhaust. It's just, I really love the design. I love the glow of it, all the neon lights. It was really, really cool. Favorite stunt of the film. This was a little tough. There was a couple that I was kind of deciding between, you know, Brian driving backwards, or doing that cool power slide at the end of the first race, which Paul Walker actually did. But I got to go with Brian driving the car into Carter's boat at the end of the film. It's just really over the top, but really, really cool. It still kind of holds up today and all these years later. This is actually the 20th anniversary of this film, surprisingly, which is cool. And it's the scene like this still holds up. This was kind of like where the idea of doing these over the top stunts that the newer installments end up kind of leaning towards more than the racing. But yeah, it's just really, really cool to see Brian driving the freaking car off the ramp onto a moving boat. It's just crazy and ridiculous, but awesome at the same time. Negatives. I got a few negatives here. The runtime is still a tad long. I know it clocks in at an hour 47, but for some reason during this rewatch, it just felt a bit too long. Maybe chalk off 5 or 10 minutes in the middle. Maybe we don't need all of the extra scenes between Paul Walker and Eva Mendes, even though I think they're supposed to insinuate that they're going to have a relationship, but it ends up not happening at the end. So I don't know. I just, there's a good 5-10 minutes somewhere that we can just chop out of this and make it a tight 90-minute film. Like the first film, it's definitely still a movie of its time, you know, with the dialogue, with the way Paul Walker and Roman talk to each other. Some of the special effects are very, very early 2000. But the stunts, I think, still hold up to this day. It's just, you know, it still feels like an early 2000s movie. Another one, not a great villain with Carter Verone. Probably the weakest villain of the franchise for sure. They just don't give Cole Hauser a whole lot to do in here. I gotta imagine most of his direction were, yeah, pick up that cigar and smoke it, or grab Eva Mendes by the throat or smack her on the ass. You know, he was playing more of an abusive boyfriend than he was an actual villain. So it's just, I just don't think they gave him a whole lot to do as far as making this villain, you know, like a really, scary, intense villain that Paul Walker and Tyrese are going up against. He was more of just like an abusive boyfriend to Eva Mendes, but that's just my take. And then the last one I have is kind of ties in with the not so great villain, and that's just the writing isn't the greatest either. It's probably one of the weakest scripts of the franchise, probably next to Tokyo Drift, which I'll talk about next week. That one is definitely worse than this film, I think. But they're kind of still in the same kind of boat where they're just, the scripts really hold them back from reaching their full potential as a great film. For example, I mean, we got that line at the end where Roman answers if he's going to kick it in Miami twice in 2 seconds. Like, it's, I don't know if it's the take that they went with, or if it's the dialogue or the script. It's something went wrong in this scene at the end where Roman is like, yeah, I think I'm going to stay in Miami for a while. And then like a millisecond later, the camera cuts and Paul Walker's like, hey, you going to kick it in Miami? And Roman's like, yeah, I think I'm going to stay. Like, stuff like that is just really weird. It cuts you off guard when you really break down this film. Like, the dialogue and just everything just doesn't make sense. And it's definitely holds the film back, like I keep saying. It's just a really, really, really bad script and kind of bad directing on Singleton's part, even though I think he did a pretty decent job with most of the film. It's just some of the direction and the writing just wasn't there for this film. Then last we have burning questions. I got a few of them here. Why doesn't Carter return in future installments? Because like at the end, we see him get handcuffed. He doesn't die. He goes to prison. Like, we don't get any kind of return of him. It would have been sweet to get him returned in like Fast and Furious 4, or maybe even down the road to like 8 or something. Like, we haven't seen Cole Hauser return as Carter. I think that would be a really cool thing if they did that in the next Fast film, or even the film after that. Yeah, it's just really interesting that they never had Cole Hauser come back. I don't know if it's because he doesn't want to come back. I don't know if it's like the studio that doesn't want any kind of connection to this film as far as the villain. I don't know. But it's just something I always pops into my mind when I'm like, hey, Carter is still alive, as far as we know. You know, he's probably still in jail or whatever. But like, it's kind of interesting that they haven't brought him back for a scene or two in a future installment. Were Tej and Suki hooking up on the side? I always ask this question when I watch this because they don't really come out and say it. You know, we see him flirt a few times, but then like we get to a certain point in the film and they're like boyfriend and girlfriend kind of. I know it's not really important to the story, but it's like I kind of feel like they've been hooking up this whole time, even though the film kind of insinuates that they've never hooked up before. I think, again, that's probably the script, but it's something I always like find myself asking, like, are they actually hooking up, or is this, you know, is this the script kind of just insinuating that they could possibly hook up in the future? I don't know. It's just something I always ask. Mia versus Monica. So this film kind of tries to set up the fact that Paul Walker and Eva Mendes could eventually start dating after this film. Eva Mendes, of course, doesn't come back at all, except for a post-credit scene. And that's another one of my burning questions, is why wasn't there more Eva Mendes? I think that's because they kind of went with the Mia route. And Fast 4, which I'll talk about in a couple weeks, Paul Walker and Jordana Brewster reunite, and they kind of rekindle their romance that they started in the first film. So that's kind of the route that they took. But I asked the question, like, do I prefer Mia or do I prefer Monica as, you know, the love interest with Paul Walker? I think I lean towards Mia because I think their chemistry is a little more deeper. I think when it comes to Eva Mendes's character, it was more of just like infatuation. It was more of like, you know, Eva Mendes is a beautiful woman. She's, you know, she's a cop as well. She knows how to, you know, handle herself. You know, this could be more of an infatuation than it was actually like love. Whereas between Brian and Mia was more, you know, deep love right there. So that's where I lean up. I'll post this question on the episode so you guys kind of get a feel of what everybody else feels, but that's just what I side with. I side with quote unquote Team Mia as the love interest for Brian. I think their chemistry works better. I think it was more of an infatuation, more flirty between Brian and Monica in this film. And then I kind of already brought this one up, but why wasn't there more Eva Mendes? We do get her and the post-credit scene in Fast 5 where she meets up with Dwayne Johnson's Hobbs character. But it's really interesting that they never brought back Eva Mendes for this, you know, in like part of the actual film. I know Fast 11 and 12 are supposed to be the end of this main storyline franchise. So maybe Carter and Monica both show up in one of those installments. Who knows? I mean, really, with them bringing back Han and Fast 9, it's really anything's possible. I mean, we could finally get Leon, which I talked about last week's episode, about he could possibly return. There's a lot of characters that could come back, and I'm really excited to see if they decide to go further back into these first couple films and bring some more characters back that we haven't seen in 20 plus years. You know, it'd be really, really awesome. To end the episode, let's go over the Fast and Furious rankings. So I have the Fast and Furious rankings pulled up. I'll run through these lists kind of as a refresher. Number one, we have Fast 5, 2, Furious 7, 3, Fast and Furious 6, 4, The Fast and the Furious, 5, Fast and Furious, aka Fast and Furious 4. Number 6, Too Fast, Too Furious, 7, The Fate of the Furious. Number 8, The Fast and the Furious, Tokyo Drift. 9, Hobbs and Shaw. 10, Fast X. And then 11, Fast 9, The Fast Saga. So Too Fast, Too Furious sits in at number 6. This is about the halfway mark of this list. Definitely one of the lowers, not really the lower, It's just the script really holds it back from being, you know, up into like the third or fourth spot. Still a lot of great Paul Walker stuff in here. I love his chemistry with Tyrese. The racing is awesome. Even the stunts and effects still kind of hold up for the most part 20 years later. It's way better than anything new we've gotten. Number seven, that's where The Fate of the Furious is. And then everything else is just garbage from there. Tokyo Drift, which I'll talk about next week. A lot of issues with that one. That's sitting there at number eight. But yeah, it's just Fast and Furious, aka Fast 4. Just really, really good. That's kind of where they reboot the franchise. And then, of course, the first film at four. It's just everything above, you know, in the top five. It's just great script, great stunts, just overall great movies. It's just, for me, the biggest thing is the script for Too Fast and Too Furious that holds it back to number six. It's just really, and the Carter villain, you know, we get Luke Evans in Fast 6, which is a really great villain. Furious 7, we get Jason Statham in there. Fast 5 is just one of the greatest action films of all time. It's just those two big things for me is the script and the Carter Verone villain is just really, really weak in here, and it just holds the film back. But still, number 6 is pretty good considering where this franchise is sitting right now. I mean, if you look at 7 through 11, it's all the new stuff in it, and it's all terrible. Just bad scripts all around, and it's just really, really unfortunate that Too Fast, Too Furious is the cutoff of what the great films are, and it's just it hurts my heart that this is where the franchise is right now. If you listen to my Fast X episode, I was not very high on that one. And then eventually when we get to, you know, Hobbs and Shaw and F9, it's going to be tough for me to get through. But I'm still looking forward to it. Maybe I'll see them differently now that I'm kind of in this Fast and Furious mode. I still love the franchise though. There's a lot of great stuff in here. The one I'm looking forward to the most is definitely, you know, Fast 5. Furious 7 with the death of Paul Walker and one of my all-time favorites, Fast and Furious 6, but I'm still having a blast during the season, even though once we get to a certain point, it's going to be tough to be more positive on these films, but I'm still going to do my best to make it a fun and enjoyable show, and just I'm really surprised by how much I really, really love Too Fast and Furious. It's always been, you know, the black sheep of the franchise. People have always been really, really down on it. If you look at the IMDb page, it's actually rated less than, you know, Tokyo Drift and Fate of the Furious and even Hobbs and Shaw. Like, it's in that Fast 10, Fast 9 range. I'm more high on it because I see the potential of it. I just, like I said, the chemistry between Paul Walker and Tyrese is awesome. We get the introduction of Tej, who becomes a major character in the franchise. The racing is great. A lot of the stunts are really, really cool. Paul Walker does most of his stunts in this film. I'm more positive on it than I think a lot of people are. I think they focused more on the bad script and the bad villain, which I totally get. You know, it's why I'm so low on it, but it's still better than half of this franchise, which is really unfortunate because it's not the greatest film. It's actually not a great film overall, but it's still really enjoyable, and there's a lot of good stuff still in there. It's just kind of wrapped around this really bad script and centered on a really, really bad written villain. So that is where the Fast and Furious rankings are sitting now. No change yet. I am curious to see if once we get to, you know, 5, 6, and 7, if any of these do change. But yeah, I'm just really, really excited to be diving into one of my favorite franchises of all time. Well, that'll do it for this week's Fast and Furious episode. Next week, we take a little trip to Tokyo for the Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift. Also, check out new release reactions every week on the show. Next up, it's Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. Until then, always remember to live life a quarter mile at a time.